Living the dream is a fairly general term, but for me, what it looks like is this. Traveling the country with my family in a trailer, climbing, being active outside, making pictures, making videos, creating content, and sharing that adventure with you. But before you take seriously anything that I said in episode 39, I think it's important to look at the 10 reasons why you should not be trying to live your dream. Adventure is for everyone, but not everyone is available for adventure. This is episode 40, The Glass Half Empty, 10 Reasons Why You Should Not Be Trying to Live the Dream.
You're listening to Adventure RX, an active prescription for the non-compliant.
Not fiery, not that terrible thing. I want to talk me out of it. Not fiery, not that terrible thing. I want to talk me out of it. Not
fiery. The Adventure RX podcast is a production of Living Vertical Studios. Visit livingvertical.org to connect with us on social media so you can see the day-to-day of what we are up to, so that you can read the blog for more behind-the-scenes information, and where you can sign up for email updates where you will receive notifications about free events, outdoor adventure meetups that we are going to be having all across North America in 2016. Additionally, you'll get notifications and email updates delivering each blog post that we put up on the homepage to you directly. Welcome to episode number 40 of the Adventure RX podcast. Today, I'm going to do something a little bit different than I have been in the last few episodes. I'm going to bring up all the reasons and all the things you should be thinking about that should tell you that living the dream, your next big adventure, taking that big risk, making that move, changing your life in whatever way you kind of have in the back of your mind, to try to talk you out of that. And if I'm able to do that in one podcast episode, I believe that I will have done you an immense favor and kept you from making a decision that is going to negatively impact your life. And if I can't talk you out of it, then I've given you that much more confidence that you have stress tested your idea and that you should get after it and you should do something about it. This is kind of a general overview of what is supposed to happen in this episode. These are all parts and parcel of the process that has been going on in my life for the last year and a half, because I didn't just wake up one day and say, hey, I'm going to move my family into a trailer and make videos and podcasts and live on the road. I came to the conclusion that I was ready to take that risk because I could not be talked out of it. And if you can be talked out of it, you should be talked out of it. So here are the 10 things that I'm going to try to throw at you based on my experience that can hopefully help you turn around before it's too late and you make the terrible mistake of devoting your life to adventure. Number one, the travel and vagabond life is often romanticized. And I mentioned this in the last episode and several episodes before that, and I'm sure you're going to hear more of it on here, that travel and vagabonding are not what are presented on Tumblr. It's hard to do anything because there's so many steps that are required just to make a cup of coffee. You don't just walk into the kitchen and make a cup of coffee. You don't just go to the refrigerator and grab something to eat. You don't flop down on the couch and turn on the TV. These are things that we take for granted, but if you're living in a more adventurous context where you're in a trailer, you're living out of a van, those are things that are comforts that we enjoy when we live in a house, when we live a more extravagant lifestyle, and I say that term, you know, relatively speaking. Those are things that we enjoy that you don't realize and you can't factor in that they're gone until you're in that position, and you don't want to make a decision looking at Tumblr, sitting on your couch where you're comfortable and watching TV, making that decision to go out and live in a much smaller space, to give up this stuff and to pursue this dream, and then find out, oh,
yeah, I didn't realize that it was going to look like this. I didn't realize it was going to feel like this. I didn't realize that it rains, and when it rains, you have to find a way to keep your van or your trailer from getting all muddy, and you have to find something to do, and there's not much that you can do because, you know, you have to go somewhere and go into an establishment. You don't get to just sit in your own couch necessarily in your own place. You know, these are just little things that go into this. There are many of those romantic points that I'm going to be touching on as the Adventure RX Roadshow unfolds, just to illustrate, hey, you know what? This is what it's like. There's no free lunch. The photos that are beautiful, the sunsets, the sunrise, they're amazing and they're worth the discomfort to me. But make no mistake, those sunsets, you're getting up at the ass crack of dawn, you're getting up before that. You're waking up when it's cold, getting out of a sleeping bag, and your back hurts because you're not on a Tempur-Pedic mattress. You're getting out and you're walking and digging through stuff and having to go out there in order to capture that moment when the sun comes up. Same thing when the sun goes down. There's no free lunch when it comes to that stuff. And I think that's really important for people to know, because that enables us to really appreciate these images and these moments that we see from other people. The way that I look at adventure photography has changed considerably when I come out of the wilderness and when I come out of a situation where I'm very much connected with the discomfort and aware of it and it's fresh in my mind. And I see a picture that somebody posts from El Cap or like Mount Everest or somewhere in the Alps and these big, beautiful alpine climbs. And I'm very aware that I'm sitting there in a coffee shop looking at this image on my cell phone. And I'm very aware that what I'm seeing and feeling and experiencing of that moment is worlds, light years apart from the actual experience of the person who is there capturing that image. And that's one of the things, that a point that, you know, certainly we'll be coming back to a lot as the Adventure RX unfolds. So, number two, something else to keep in mind. Is this an escape? What are your motivations? Why do you want to go out there and live the dream? A lot of people do it for different reasons. I know at various points in my life, I wanted to escape. I wanted to escape from diabetes. I wanted to escape from relationships. I wanted to escape from responsibilities, depression, and negative feelings that I had about myself. And really, previous relationships and diabetes all kind of coalesced to make me feel depressed, made me feel very negatively. And going out and living the dream was something that kind of gave me bigger things to worry about. But at the end of the day, that was only a temporary solution, and I would wind up being a long way away from home and still having all of these problems, and then none of the assets of being in my comfort zone to help me deal with them. And that put me in a position where I really had to go out on a limb and deal with those things. And I think that I grew as a result of that. But a lot of times, people look at adventure as something to escape who they are or some part of who they are to become something. And that is a viable thing to do through adventure. I mean, you certainly will escape on some level. But in that escape, you're going to run smack into those very things that you are trying to get away from in a context in which it is much, much, much harder to avoid that confrontation. So is it appropriate to use adventure as an escape? What are your motivations? Are you doing it because you want to be recognized? Are you doing it because you want other people to accept your lifestyle and be excited about the fact that, you know, you want to get after it and that you don't want to prioritize material things? You know, in my case, I love my dad to death, but he still doesn't understand why I live the way that I live. He still is waiting for me to get a haircut and a real job. And when I got a haircut and a real job a year ago, he was pretty happy, and that was the closest I felt to really having his full approval of my lifestyle. And as soon as I said, hey, you know what, like, I can't hack this anymore, and I need to live the way that feels right to me, you know, he just didn't really want to hear about it. And so that can be a hard thing to accept, but the escape is not really as straightforward as getting away from it. If anything, it puts you in an environment where you have to deal with it and you have to come to grips with reality. This is something that I have done and I think is useful for other people to do as well. Number three, visualization and preparation. This kind of goes back to what I said at the very beginning about looking at Tumblr, sitting on the couch, watching TV while you're sipping your coffee and thinking, oh yeah, that's cool, I could do that. Well, the hard part is to visualize what happens when you're done drinking that cup of coffee and you get up and go to the kitchen and say, okay, what would it be like right now if I were living out of my car? What would it be like right now if I were living in a trailer? How would the cleanup of this thing go? Where would I put it? And would I just kind of put it on the counter and wait till later? Or would I be able to afford that luxury because I have to clean it and put it away because I'm going to then drive down the road because I can't sleep here because this is just where I parked for a moment to brew up a cup of coffee and kind of get off the road, but I can't sleep here and I can't have my coffee cup laying in the sink while I drive the trailer down the road. I have to clean it up immediately. I have to put it away where it goes, and I only have one cup of coffee or one coffee cup, you know, because I can't have a whole shelf full of cups and plates and all those things. We only have exactly what we need just to get by. So visualizing that experience in everything that you're doing, take time, you know, wear a little rubber band around your wrist. And every time you look at that, think about, okay, if I was trying to do this right now, here's how it would look and feel if I were out on the road, if I were living out of a backpack, living out of a car, you know, traveling the world. Here's what it actually looks and feels like, and trying to project yourself into that situation, because that helps you paint a more realistic picture for yourself. You may have noticed this episode and the last episode, I've been recording on a different setup. I haven't been using my studio setup. I've been using a shotgun mic and a handheld recorder, and trying to find a balance between portability and just minimal messing around and wires, because I'm trying to project what it is going to be like to do media work in a trailer, living on the road, small confined spaces, without having in-depth technical setups that just have so much room to breathe. I want to get to the point where I can hone my skills using much less, and it's important for me to know this is what it's going to feel like to record a podcast in a trailer without having everything that I can just leave set up constantly, and to kind of go through that. That's a big part of the preparation. Number four, how durable are you? How durable are your relationships? What is your psyche like? What is your mindset? If you feel like, and again, this comes down to soul searching and being very aware and knowledgeable of who you are and your strengths and weaknesses. This is very personal stuff. But if you realize that you're the type of person who, like me, you get really excited about something and you get really amped up about it and you start like moving forward towards it until you run into that first obstacle, and then it's just like, ah, damn it. And it just takes the wind out of your sails and you feel defeated and you don't want to do it anymore. If you're like that in other areas of your life, what is your fallback plan? What does that stopgap measure look like to keep your own mentality from defeating you when you're in the moment and you've kind of gone over the edge, you've made that commitment, you're out there? How do you deal with durability? How much irritation, how much discomfort, how much suffering can you handle? And these are questions that I ask myself all the time, and I'm going to be referring back to these episodes, 39 and this episode, episode 40, I'm sure in the future, because these are things that I've had to ask myself, because these are things that I struggle with. How durable are your relationships? Last week I talked about how important it is to have a supportive spouse. How durable is that relationship? I mean, I love my wife, but I'm going to find out how durable that relationship is when we're out on the road. It's one thing to be supportive when we're in front of TV, on our phones, drinking our coffee, is that same support going to be a constant when we're out on the road? We haven't tested it in exactly this case. Now, I have a little advantage here because Stephanie and I have tested that part of our relationship in the past because we have lived on the road before, although it was before we had a child and it wasn't at a time when she was working a job and when I was working a job to support ourselves at the same time. So this is a different set of circumstances that we're going to be tested in. And, you know, it's something that I wonder about. It's something that I'm concerned about. And I want to be fair to her, and I don't want to put her in a situation where she's going to be over her head and feel like she's obligated to live up to some ideal that I have and just suffer silently through something that is sucking the life out of her. And I don't want to do that to myself either. So, you know, how durable are those relationships? Friendships, relatives, people that we may not get to see as much because we're out living this type of lifestyle. Are they people that are going to just write us off and say, oh, screw you, you guys are out doing your thing, I don't really want to see you anymore? And if it's going to be that way, or are there people in your life that are like, hey, you know what, I respect that you're doing this, I understand, let's catch up when we have a chance. If you're not able to make it out at this point, hey, no problem, we understand. But durability matters a lot for yourself as an individual and for relationships that you have with other people in your life. Number five goes along with that: social network, opinions versus the support network. So when you put something out on social media, people are going to, oftentimes, they're going to either blindly support it or blindly negate it. It can be really beneficial to use that blind support. And I say blind support meaning that, you know, when we started Living Vertical, the people who were super supportive, we didn't have a resume building an organization, empowering people, doing anything of this nature with film and photography. We didn't have anything to show for ourselves other than a goal and a mission and the little bit that, you know, of desire that we had to kind of bridge that gap. And so people, knowing what they knew of us, said, we believe that you can go from where you are to the point where you can make a documentary, where you can shoot photography professionally, where you can shoot video professionally, where you can record audio and have it be passable at a professional level, where you can edit and you can tell these stories. We believe that you can do that, and this is going to be awesome, and we support it. There were other people who did not share that same supportive attitude. There were some people that said incredibly hurtful things, especially if you're a person like I am. I take things very personally. When somebody takes a very quick look at what we're doing and says, hey, are you donating your money to charity? And I say, no, actually, we're, and this is a story, one of the things that happened actually at the beginning when we started Living Vertical, I got an email from a girl, I believe she was in England, and she said, hey, I just wanted to know what charity you're donating your money to. And this is when we were raising money to get the documentary off the ground. And I had not anticipated how much education I would have to do of people to say, look, you know, supporting diabetes and supporting empowerment for people with diabetes, it also means things that aren't research. Like, research is the go-to way that most people typically perceive supporting people with diabetes, but there's more to supporting people with diabetes than research. And research has a very strong stake in that game. They do their fundraising really well. What is much harder to do is to say, hey, it's not research, it's not a new device, this is about changing the way that people look at diabetes in the public. This is about changing the narrative from one that's negative to one that's positive. And initially, I wasn't prepared for the pushback that would come when I said, no, we're actually raising money for a film that we're creating out of this because we want to spread it far and wide for free to the public in schools and anybody who wants to use it for any purpose to just empower and share a more positive, hopeful message of life with diabetes, and that's what we're doing with this money. And She then took that response. She didn't actually reply back to me. She wrote a blog post and started sharing it all over the place, saying how we were going on a vacation, stealing money, and just completely, she didn't even really correctly interpret the points that I gave her in my response. And I was really pissed because I took like 45 minutes to answer her email and really give her a well thought out response, because it meant a lot to me that people understood that while I appreciate and respect research, this is something that's different. And it's not better than, and it's not worse than, it's different. And there need to be different things, and everybody has to contribute what they have. And I was not prepared for the negativity that came from her. And it was really hurtful, especially as somebody who also had type 1, that instead of being inspired by what I was doing and or at least appreciative of it and saying, hey, you know what, that's not for me, but okay, whatever, and just leaving it, she was so negative about it. And that really bothered me, because I expected more support from, you know, another person that had type 1. And throughout the diabetes community, most people have always been really supportive. There have been a handful of people who just are very apathetic and just ignore and are not supportive and are even rude. It happens. And the same thing with family members and friends. Be prepared for people saying, that's stupid, you're wasting your life. You know, you have to be able to handle that. And if you're not willing and able to, and when I say handle it, I mean let go of it. Because if somebody feels that way, you can make your case, and then that's really all you can do. And if they ask you, hey, what are you doing? Or they express their opinion and you say, well, thanks for your opinion. Here's what it actually means to me and why I'm choosing to live my life this way. And they say, oh yeah, well, you're stupid and you're wasting your life anyways. You have to be able to agree to disagree and detach enough from that relationship. And that can be really hard to do with the amount of opinions and expression of opinions that happen on social media. Number 6, are you willing to commit to loving what you're doing even when it sucks? It's gonna suck. There are gonna be, don't, you can't measure the value of your experience and your adventure based on the high points alone. You have to measure it based on the high and the low points. And the high points have to be high enough that they are worth it to go through the lowest points in order to arrive at those points. And the high points are temporary. The high points are temporary. But the good news is that the low points are temporary too. And so if you have that appreciation of the fact that, yes, it's going to suck sometime, and when it's like that and it's negative and you're just at the end of your rope, just give it a little bit more time and the tide will turn and you'll go back up and you'll go back down. And that's going to happen. You have to appreciate the transition. And again, like number 3, visualizing and preparation, understand that it's going to require suffering at various points in time, and get ready for that to happen. You have to love it enough that it's worth it even when it sucks. Number 7, this is a big one, finances and obligations. Do you have enough money to do this? Do you have skills that are developed at a point to where you can go out and find work that if you run out of money, that you have opportunities to survive and feed yourself? What are your obligations like? Do you have a mortgage? Do you have kids that are relying on you, a relative that you're taking care of that you can't just leave? These are all things that vary from person to person. And if my answer to number 7 of finances and obligations were different than what it is right now, I wouldn't be here sitting here having this podcast conversation with you, telling you about how I'm getting ready to go out on the road. I would be telling you about what I'm doing to cope with the fact that I cannot do that responsibly at this time. There have been times when I had to say, you know what, I need to get a job, I need to knuckle down, and I need to do my work so that I can address the responsibilities that I have, because someday I'm going to want to go back out there and I want to live my life and do my thing again. And I don't have the skills right now to work in the job that I want to work while being mobile, I need to take time and develop that. Same thing with having a dependent. Having Lilo, when she was first born, there's no way that we could go out on the road and do what we're doing. I shouldn't say that there's no way. But some people probably have done it, and I'm sure that it could be done, but it wasn't something that we felt comfortable with, where I would have been able to have the support of Stephanie doing that. We had to say, okay, have we met our obligations? I'm thankful to say that I don't have, you know, family members that are relying on me, that are sick or relying on me for care. But that's something that I think about. You know, my parents are old. No disrespect to them. They are, you know, they're over the hill. And should they require more attention and more care, that would definitely mitigate our ability to go out and do these things. Having debt, that's something financially, it's a big part of it. If we had a mortgage on a house, like, there have been houses that we've looked at in the past where we're like, this is such a cool house. If we, you know, if we just settled down, we got it, like, maybe this would be cool. If we had made those choices to have that house, then our finances wouldn't be such that we would be able to go out and do that. So you have to get things in shape. And if you're not in the right place financially, hey, it's probably not worth it to go out and leave obligations hanging, to go into more debt and to make silly decisions in order to try to live the dream. Like, in order to do that, it takes time and it takes a process, and you have to work the process all the way through. Number 8, timing is critical. Is now the right time? Maybe it's not. I've said many times, it's taken me years to get to this point where I am right now, where I can make these decisions. It's taken a lot of knowledgeable investment of my time where I say, I'm going to do this because it's going to get me to this point. But there have been many years of time that I've spent doing things that have indirectly led me to this point. I didn't always have this as a goal and saying to myself, okay, I'm going to do this when I'm married and have a kid and I'm 33, and so I have to start now when I'm 20 years old by going to this college and saving my money. I didn't think like that. There were a lot of indirect things that just happened as a result of dumb luck that adapted well to this sort of lifestyle. Or you could say, maybe even flip that around and say, maybe the reason why I want to live this way is because of the fact that my mind was always tuned in this direction, even from a young age. But the point is to say that timing matters a lot. When you do something and how you do something relate to whether or not you can do it. The question isn't, can you live this kind of lifestyle? Can you not live this kind of lifestyle? Can you accomplish your goal or can you not accomplish your goal? The question is, can you accomplish your goal right now? If not, then there are things that can be addressed. And so I want that to stand out as a positive rather than a negative, but the timing is a really, really important consideration. Number 9, how do you define failure and are you willing to let go of fear? If you're afraid to fail, and if falling on your face in front of people who know about the risk that you're taking, having to come back to your in-laws and say, look guys, can we crash here with you for a while we get back on our feet? If that's something that is just like the worst thing in the world to you and is, you know, a point of failure and where you're going to beat yourself up over that and you're just not willing to risk that, or maybe you don't have that opportunity. I'm appreciative of the fact that I have really amazing in-laws that have been very, very supportive of what Stephanie and I have done in the past, and that are also very supportive of what we're doing in the future and that sense of adventure that we want to bring into Lilo's life, so that I know that if we go out there and we fall on our face, we can come back and say, look guys, we did what we could. Help us get back on our feet. We'll contribute as best we can to what you have going on so that we're not just, you know, a mooch, and we'll do what we can to give to you so that we can have a place to kind of get back on our feet so that we can move along with our lives. And if you're not willing to fail, you're not going to take risks. And risks are the only way that we grow as people. It's the only way that we get better at things that we're not good at. It's the only way that we develop skills and that we discover the things that we are meant to do. And if we want to live in a bubble, if we want safety and we want consistency and we want regularity all the time, we're going to have a hard time making strides and growing as people. And that's one of the things that diabetes has taught me so well, is that failure is always going to be part of the situation. You're always going to have days when your numbers are high, your numbers are low, where you get shut down, where everything you're doing is not working. So if you're going to fail anyways, why the hell not try to do something fantastic where at least the upside is big enough that, look, you know what? I failed. So what? Big deal. You know, listen to episode 39. Make sure that you have these things that, you have those 10 things in play, that you've checked off those boxes so that you're making a good decision about what you're doing, but then go for it and don't be afraid to fail. But if you are afraid to fail, again, that might mean that this is, you know, the risk taking and being out in an environment where you are not fully in control all the time, that might not be a good idea. Number 10, am I abandoning something irreversible? Do I have an exit strategy? What is your situation? What is the downside to the worst case scenario? This is very much connected with number 10 in episode 39, where you're aware of the fact that, you know, what you're leaving, it needs to be something that is worth leaving. You have to be able to let go of it and fully commit to that decision, because if part of you feels like, I don't really want to let go of my lifestyle, I don't want to let go of this one thing in order to have something different, then maybe you're not ready to make that move at this point. So those are the lists of things that have guided me through executing the goals necessary to get out and to live on the road, to go against the grain of the way that people are quote unquote supposed to live with diabetes. When you have diabetes, it's like, you know, you need to have health insurance, you need to have this, you need to have that. And I will just touch on health insurance for a moment. One of the reasons why, because that is a very real thing, one of the reasons why we chose to relocate into Massachusetts is because the healthcare here is so much better. I love Utah. It is a magnificent state, but the healthcare in Utah, the health insurance, let me say, is terrible. At least when you compare it to states in the Northeast and the way that they take care of the people there. And the insurance that you can get for the dollar value is much, much more affordable. And so basing yourself out of a place where you have good enough insurance that you're not crippled by that financial burden is really important. I'll be perfectly honest and say that one of the plans that I have is to go to Canada at least once every year and buy insulin, because in Canada, I can buy without a prescription, over the counter, I can buy insulin for the same amount that I was paying with my copay. Okay, but when I had health insurance at the job that I was working previously to this, I had great insurance, and to the credit of my employers, they went way out of their way to make sure that everybody that worked there had good insurance and that they were taken care of, which is admirable, because today you see so many companies that go the opposite direction and are like, hey, good luck. We had excellent insurance there, but even with excellent insurance, my copay was $60 to get Humalog. So I can go to Canada and buy Humalog over the counter, or Novo Rapid, whatever it is, whatever they typically sell in Canada. I can buy that over the counter for $60 out of pocket. And you know what? If I need to do that, I'm going to be in Canada anyways. Why the hell wouldn't I do that? You know, and same thing goes with test strips. I found that if I buy my test strips on Amazon, I can get if you look on Amazon, you can find test strips that are very reasonably priced, where you get 100 test strips for $20. That's reasonable. Taking unconventional methods to care for my diabetes, that's something that I'm totally willing to do. And the one thing that is really the pain point in terms of the decision and the lifestyle in terms of insurance is going to be getting my Dexcom covered by the insurance that I can afford to buy here in Massachusetts. I think that it will still go, but I think that it's going to require a lot more legwork on my part to make that happen. So there are sacrifices in that department, but I can tell you that, you know, when I have a high blood sugar and I'm sitting on my butt all day at a desk or on the couch or in a car and I'm not really doing anything, I feel really depressed and angry. I feel bad about myself. When I go out climbing and I have a high blood sugar as a result of it, I'm a little bummed, but you know what? It was worth it and it was a good day out. We're going to have highs and lows. We're going to fail. It's okay. That doesn't mean that we should try to fail, but it means that we shouldn't avoid the opportunities for success that we can have if we just stop being afraid.
Hey, I hope you enjoyed this episode of the Adventure RX podcast. I hope that I was able to either talk you into your next big adventure or talk you out of your next big adventure because it's not the right time. Either way, my goal is to make you aware of the role that adventure can and should play in our lives every day so that we're not just coasting through our lives in stagnation, just seeking to be entertained and to eat and to be comfortable. There's more to life than that. And I think that where we grow as people and enjoy our lives and really have value as people is where we start to encounter challenges and we take those challenges on. If any part of this message, this podcast, the work that we're doing on our homepage, on social media, if any of that connects with you, I would like to ask you to support the work that we're doing just by simply subscribing to the podcast and then sharing whatever portion of our content that resonates the most with you. Share that with your friends on social media. Coming up in the Adventure RX podcast, we are on the brink of a big transition and things are changing here. This is a paradigm shift for us, not just in terms of physical logistics, but really taking our message of adventure as medicine and implementing it in our daily lives. That's kind of a big step for me that I am really excited about. And in the next episode, I want to talk about some of the changes that are happening both in the content and the way the content is delivered, and so that you understand why we are making the decisions that we are. Because for the last year and a half, I've been sitting at a desk, I've been living a very conventional life, and I've been itching to have something different, something bigger and better to talk about. And now that's going to happen. But with that transition is going to come smaller space, less predictability, and all kinds of unknowns that I can't even begin to imagine what they're going to be like from this point. All I know is that as we move forward, I'm going to do my best to continue producing weekly episodes to share that journey with you. I hope that you will join in and follow along, subscribe to this channel, visit livingvertical.org, and connect with us on social media. Until the next time.